It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself amongst the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. James.
Good evening, everyone. Put that there, shall I? So the title of today's topic or talk is The Call of Christian Living, Daniel, an example of a different life. And the short extract that Trevor just read is the start of one of the many run-ins he had with the authorities in Babylon. And actually, for those that know the story, this was the start of him actually being sent into the lion's den, that famous story that sort of ends the narrative account of Daniel. And so what we're going to do is we're going to look firstly at Daniel's situation generally, what he would have been experiencing, how he would have felt in the exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. And then we're going to look at ourselves. So we're going to look, do we live outwardly different lives? And then we're going to look inward and see, do we look inwardly different lives as Christians? So, firstly, what is Daniel's situation? Well, the king of Babylon attacked Jerusalem and stole some of its money and some of its most precious items as well. They also took Daniel, who was a youngster, along with a couple of his friends who were a similar age. So Daniel, at the start of this book, is torn away from his home, from his family, from where he belongs. And this is something that happened several times in Israel's history. Just imagine that. Being taken from your home, from amongst where you lived, and being forced to move somewhere different, with a completely different language, with unfamiliar customs. It's something that has happened, very sadly, quite a lot in human history. And it's genuinely heartbreaking when you take a moment to really think about what that would be like. For example, millions were taken from their homeland in Africa and transported thousands of miles away, either to America or Arabia. They would never see their homeland again. And I'm just going to read a short extract from a book about the slave trade in Haiti, which I think really captures the real tragedy of the situation. So there was a baron who saw the colony of Haiti in 1790, at the very summit of its prosperity. And one day he saw a slave leaning on the handle of his hoe, looking sadly into the sunset. "What are you doing, Nazimbo?" he asked. "What are you looking at?" He replied, and tears rolled from his eyes, "I see my own country." The baron said to himself, "I saw my own country there also, and I have hope of seeing it again. But you, poor man, will never see yours again. Or perhaps if we take a brief look at the last 100 years of our history, really, really recent history, and a short glance will tell you of numerous men, women, and children taken captive and forced to move far away with little or no contact with their family, often facing a really terrible fate. And so just as we start talking about Daniel, I think it's really important to remember that for Daniel, it's a really, really tragic situation. If we look at the next slide, we see just how far he and his countrymen will have been moved. That's a modern Google Maps. There's no computer to email from, no phone to call, no letters that could be sent home. Even worse, what is it that he's actually going to be sent over there to do? He's going to be trained up and forced to run the very administration that has destroyed his homeland and exiled him. He's going to be used as grease in the machinery of Babylonian bureaucracy. Every day, every moment he was there, he probably felt an intense pain and anguish over his fate and the fate of his people. He would have had a real sense of not being in the right place, of being a stranger in a foreign land. Psalm 137 describes how the Jews felt in exile. By the rivers of Babylon, we sat and wept when we remembered Zion. There, on the poplars, we hung our harps. For there, our captors asked us for songs. Our tormentors demanded songs of joy. They said, "Sing to us one of the songs of Zion. How can we sing the songs of the Lord while in a foreign land?" So I think when we look at that, you know, utterly tragic backdrop to the story of Daniel, I think what is quite amazing is that Daniel, despite this horrible situation that led him to be in Babylon, he still serves with honesty and integrity. And he never forgets where his true loyalties lie, where his true loyalties lie with God. And so we're going to move several hundred years later to Peter. And Peter is writing to Christians in the ancient world, all over the ancient world, scattered all over the ancient world. And he says, "Dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles." He deliberately refers back to the story of exile that we see in the Old Testament. As Christians, they have that same feeling of not being where they really belong. I guess the challenge for you here is, do we have that same sense, that same feeling of being a foreigner or an exile in this world? Or do we feel perhaps comfortable where we are? I think that there's a real danger that when we're somewhere comparatively nice, like West London, we can actually forget that sense of the world being imperfect and actually there are better things and that we do not belong here. Occasionally we might be going through a tough time or we might see something terrible in the news. And then we might have that sense, actually, you know, there is something truly wrong with the world. There is something really terrible. We might momentarily have that sense of anguish over the cruel things that go on. But in our day-to-day lives, I think there's a real danger that we are comfortable and complacent about our place in the world and about our lives here. We were talking in home group not long ago about the Lord's Prayer. And in the Lord's Prayer, the very start, just after the sort of opening couple of lines, it says, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven." It's a real radical and sincere longing for God to change the world we live in, to establish the justice of his kingdom. And I guess the question is, do we pray this prayer with sincerity? Certainly for myself, I can say no a lot of the time. Do we really want to see the foundations of this world and our lives changed, like the prayer ask God to do. Do we really, truly have that sense of injustice and radical transformation that prayer alludes to? So we've looked a little bit about the situation that Daniel was in and, you know, the genuinely tragic backdrop of the exile into Babylon. And now we're going to look at this challenge of living a Christian life, a different life. And so we're going to look at how we live outwardly. This is in front of others. So I'll read the passage from Peter that I was talking about. It's 1 Peter 2, verse 11 and 12, if you do want to follow it. Peter says, "Dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles to abstain from sinful desires, which wage war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they will accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. So there's kind of two things here. There's sort of that sense that actually being an exile in a hostile world means that actually we have to really be careful of our behaviour and really be certain that we can live good Christian lives outwardly. And there's also an incredibly positive sense that actually, although people will be looking to accuse you because of good behaviour and because of integrity, if you behave with integrity, they will actually glorify God on the day he visits us. So it's a really powerful opportunity for witness as well. So Peter warns us that as Christians, we will be marked out by people as different. And he tells us to live lives that are worthy of this. So I guess the challenge here is twofold on a practical level. So firstly, do we let people around us know that we are Christians? Or is it something that deep down we try and conceal as much as we can? And the second point, as Christians, do we actually behave differently or do we buckle to peer pressure? So I think in certain situations, being a Christian will highlight you as being different from those around you. But I was thinking in most work situations, I can imagine it's just kind of thing that doesn't necessarily come up particularly. It's not something that people necessarily flag up a lot or that would come up in conversation. It isn't something that people like to talk about. I think we can be a bit British and a bit stuffed up our lip. And we don't like to talk about personal things like faith or beliefs or religion. But I was wondering, and this is, again, for myself, how many times have you been asked, "Oh, what did you do this weekend?" You're like, "Oh, I went to the cinema. I watched a dozen episodes of The American Office." And you don't mention that you went to church. Or if you do, you kind of really have to psych yourself up to do it like it's a really big deal because you know that actually deep down you are quite uncomfortable saying that to somebody. I think, why do this? I think part of it is that you're just simply worried that people think you're weird. And that's, frankly, I think that's it. I think a lot of the time you just think you're going to look weird. But I think also perhaps we are a little bit concerned that people have a negative perception of Christianity in general. And perhaps sometimes we're worried that we will be mistaken for one of the people on this slide. Perhaps a little bit seen as a bit judgmental or a little bit hypocritical. You've got, is it Helen Lovejoy, the character from The Simpsons? There we are. So I think that perhaps some of this negative, I was thinking perhaps some of this negative perception of Christians perhaps does come down to the fact that some people know Christians who are kind of loud or they sort of follow certain media portrayals of Christians. But they do actually know Christians who they respect and really admire. But the thing is, those Christians are probably a little bit nervous or shy or quiet about how important their faith is to them. And because they're so shy and nervous about expressing that, then those people end up sort of not thinking of those people when they think of Christianity. They sort of automatically think of the kind of negative perceptions of the faith. Does that make sense? I kind of haven't expressed that a little bit convolutedly. But either way, perhaps if this has hit a chord of you, the challenges of sharing your faith. it is something we could genuinely, we'd love to be able to pray with you about. If it's sharing with friends or with colleagues or with family, please do see somebody afterwards, come to the front, and it is something we'll pray for you about. So then we go on to the second question, which is whether we genuinely live differently as Christians or whether we go with the peer pressure. And if we do, in what way are we tempted to do this? So Daniel and his friends are constantly pressured into doing things that would go against the Babylon, their faith. So if it be eating meat sacrificed to other gods or actually worshipping the Babylonian king, essentially they're just sort of, they're tempted into forgetting their distant homeland and their God and just becoming Babylonian, just like everyone else there. But they remember their faith. And as Peter says, they are exiles. They do not belong in Babylon, but to God. And in 1 Peter 4:4, he describes a situation where the Gentiles will heap abuse on those not taking part in the things going on around them. So, trying to think of personal experience of when this would happen, I think one of the most challenging times for some people when it comes to living differently as Christians, I think it's probably at university, certain like element of drinking culture and all that sort of thing. And I think that it's difficult there because there's a lot of pressure to go along with, you know, to really conform with what other people are doing and what people are glorifying in. But ironically, I actually know, I knew quite a lot of people at uni who didn't enjoy that kind of heavy drinking and that sort of clubbing side of things. Not for religious reasons, they just genuinely just didn't enjoy that. But they went along with it anyway, just because they thought that was what was expected of them. And they didn't want to feel left out, they didn't want to feel like they weren't impressing other people. And I don't know, like Facebook, I think a lot of the time people do this sort of thing for show, but you can see photos of people who are on sort of, you know, nights out or whatever, and they're kind of like, you know, trying to do the kind of, yeah, we're having a great time, but you could just see in their eyes that deep down, they weren't happy. No matter, even though they're putting on that facade, you could see that they just weren't, it wasn't their thing, they were a bit uncomfortable. I think one of the things as well, I think some of you may experience, is sports socials at uni could be quite difficult. Because you have that real quite intense pressure to sort of like conform with your teammates and do what they're doing as well. I think it's hard to resist because you are worried about being isolated from the group. I think looking back at university, it is possible to stay involved in some ways, but I think sometimes you do have to sort of accept that you will, you know, you might have to sometimes be isolated or be a little bit perhaps not regarded as not much fun by the others in that team. I think that's just part of it. If I look at myself, I'd say probably actually learned that through trial and error, very much through trial and error, if I'm completely honest. But one thing that one piece of advice that was given to me before I went to university, so obviously I was going to be doing rugby and stuff, which particularly like, you know, they particularly love their sort of heavy drinking side of things. Somebody advised me, said, actually, you know, it will be difficult in some respects, but if you're good at either rugby or good at your faith and actually behaviour integrity, they will respect you eventually. And that's true. Eventually they will respect you. It might be difficult along the way, but you will get that respect. So obviously university is a very short period of time. It's going to be, what, 3-4 years of your life? So in what other areas could we be pressured into conforming? And I think one of the ways that's sort of particularly sneaks up on people is through what we say. In the book of James, that we're worried about the power of our tongue. So he tells us that what we say can cause problems and set us on a path to destruction. And Jesus in Matthew 15, he says, what goes into someone's mouth does not defile them, but what comes out is what defiles them. The things that come out of a person's mouth come from the heart, and these defile them. For out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, and slander. I then wonder perhaps if some of the people here, perhaps we have felt that temptation to join in with the bad things that have been said about people or engage with those kind of unedifying conversations. Again, if that's you, that's something we'd love to be able to pray with you about towards the end of the service. But what the thing is as well, words can also be really uplifting as well as destructive. And so I just wonder how many people here have noticed perhaps there's somebody at work or in friendship groups who are a little bit isolated, who are a little bit pushed to the edges. Perhaps it's deliberately or perhaps because people just don't really talk to them that much. And I wonder if God is perhaps challenging you this week to open up your mouth and speak to them and speak to those people to build them up and make them feel more included. You could be amazed at the difference just a small conversation could have with people. So thirdly and finally, we're going to look at, do we live inwardly different lives? So I'm going to reread quickly the passage from Daniel. So it says, it pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps. Does anyone know what a satrap is? No? I looked it up. It's like a Persian official. To rule throughout the whole kingdom. So Daniel really really distinguished himself among the administrators and satraps by his exceptional qualities. And the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. And this is the important verse. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs. But they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. And this is the thing, so when it comes to behaving, sometimes it is difficult when people are watching, but sometimes it is actually easier to sort of not live differently when people aren't watching. And to give you an example of this, so obviously playing sport, one of the big questions, probably the question that people ask me most, is do you have to change your diet? And do you have to eat specific foods? If I'm completely honest, yes. Do I? Sometimes. So one of the things that happened a couple of times actually is we live by like the big Tesco's in Twickenham, and there's quite a lot of other like people that I know that play rugby nearby. I do have a bit of a sweet tooth, and there's like a box of Choco Shreddies, like chocolate Shreddies. Now, like any nutritionist will tell you, like sugary breakfasts are just the worst thing. Don't go there. Have a fry up instead. Sugary breakfasts are bad. Okay. But I really do like these Choco Shreddies, and whenever they're on offer, I generally will tend to buy them. But there's been a couple of times when I've known that it's been on offer. I think it's normally sort of like £3.54 or something like that. It's been knocked down to £2. And I go into Tesco's and I know they're offer. I'm like, right, I'm going to get some. I've got a basket full of things. And then I see other rugby players or other people that I know from rugby. And I suddenly think, actually, like healthy food, it might be healthy food, it might be okay food, but that big box of Choco Shreddies is really going to stand out in my shopping basket. That is really going to get noticed. And I sort of decide, maybe I'll come back later and get them. Or perhaps you're writing an email for work and you suddenly realise, oh, I'm actually going to have to copy my boss into this. I'm going to have to CC him into this email. How much more diligent and careful will you be when it comes to writing that email? How much more, how many times will you reread it and make sure it's kind of reads well and it's perfectly written if you know that somebody higher up is going to read it? So sometimes when people have their eyes on you, it can mean that you really do sort of improve your, should we say, behaviour and diet. But the great thing about Daniel is he's not just doing it for show. So when these satraps and administrators digged into him and like looked at what he was doing, they expected to find some dirt. They thought, right, we're going to dig into this, we're going to find some corruption, we're going to find some skeletons in his closet. But because Daniel has behaved with such integrity, they don't find that. He's had real integrity throughout, and there aren't any skeletons that he can bring up, and they have to resort to other means to trap him. The thing is as well, with somebody like Daniel, with his tragic backdrop, you could understand if he'd actually slacked off or he hadn't tried hard. If you ever think that you've had a horrible boss, spare a thought for Daniel. Daniel's bosses had wrenched him from his homeland, forced him into a bureaucratic job for their empire. He made them, the boss made him serve a nation that had killed and exiled his people. And in this time of service, he and his friends have been threatened with death several times. But despite this, Daniel is a man of such integrity that he has served with irreproachable diligence and honesty. And the great thing about Daniel, when you read those stories, is he never points to himself. He always points to God. He always points to God when it comes to interpretations of dreams or other things. He says, "It's not me, it's the Lord." Points upwards. And so it's not just about being good on the outside, but it's also about being good on the inside. And the danger is that while we might not actually be doing wrong things around us, like physically or that could be seen by others, inside we're burning with anger, with lust, and we actually almost resent the good things that we kind of do. I'd just like to say God is not calling us to be a split person, someone who behaves in a certain way but deep down wants to do something different. No. Instead, he wants a complete transformation from your mind and soul outwards. As Paul says in Romans 12, "Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind." To close then, despite his personal pain at the fate of his fate and the fate of his people, Daniel, despite being a stranger in a foreign land, managed to stay true to his gods and his beliefs. His God and his beliefs. We, as Christians, are also in a strange and foreign land, far from our spiritual home. We can look to the same God Daniel did 2,600 years ago to help us live a truly different life. And so, as we do go into communion, we remember that same God, the God who would close the mouths of the lions that Daniel faced in the den. And we also think of his son, Jesus, who loved us despite our imperfections and came to this world to die for us.